At first sight, it seems a little bit outside of the topic of the conference, but for those of you who are calculating anomalous dimensions of local operators in n equal to 4, you probably know that the asymptotics of Gluon operators of twist 2, some asymptotic of Gluon operator twist 2, can be extracted from the BFL equation, and it's a very good check for your approach. So that may be of some interest even to your community. Okay, I will be talking for some this. Unfortunately, I will cover this. It's still not... I will cover this topic. Oops, what is the right? Yes. Only in this part. And the first part will be devoted to actual calculations of the high energy asymptotics in n equal to 4 and QCD. First of all, I will remind you about the Reggie limit in the conformal theory. Then I will tell you about the approach. Well, you can, of course, sit down and calculate Feynman diagrams, but well, there are more effective methods, and one of them is to write down evolution equations instead of calculation of the diagrams. It was realized by people in the 70s. You can, for example, to get the Diglab evolution, you can sum up the diagrams, as it was done in my home department of St. Petersburg, Russia, or you can just use random group and get your results in a much quicker way. So I will try to attempt something of that sort instead of calculation of Feynman diagrams. Then I will tell you about this, how I get the result for the amplitude using the evolution equations approach. I will tell you about the leading order, which is kind of trivial, and my attention will be mostly devoted to next to leading order because of the check of the approach, and also there are some nice results. First, I will tell you about n equal to 4 superlinear mills, then a couple of words about QCD, what can be done and what is difficult to do there. And in the outlook, I will try to relate this to anomalous dimensions of light ray operators and tell you what is done and what are the problems. Okay, let's start. Let me remind, first of all, about the conformal limit, Reggie limit in the conformal theory. Let me consider the correlation function of some, say, four chiral primary operators. Correlation function of operators depends on two conformal ratio like that. And of course, on the coupling constant. I will not discuss it, but just mention a couple of times that nowadays there are some predictions at large lambda, but I will be talking about small lambda, about perturbation theory. And my goal will be the following. I will resum the following contributions. Coupling constant times logarithm of large energy. I will do it in the leading order and in the next leading order. So, formally speaking, this coefficient, well, and this also is the topic of my talk. What is known about the high energy scattering in conformal theory? You can visualize high energy scattering in the following way. Oops, sorry. You take four coordinates. You take 2 plus coordinates to minus infinity and plus infinity of this point, and for this point, you do the same with minus coordinates. Then the conformal ratios can be chosen in such a way that one of them scales with energy. The scaling of these pluses and minus components correspond to the increase of energy in momentum representation. So one of the ratios can be chosen in such a way that it scales with energy. Another ratio, a little bit more complicated, is energy independent. So the amplitude is a function of these two conformal ratios. And let me just mention that in this limit, well, before that we have a full conformal group. But when we take this particular limit, of pluses and minuses, sorry, going to plus and minus infinity, we are left only with the subgroup of the total conformal group, which leaves invariant transverse plane. And this is a cell to C group of these operators, which you can take from the textbook. In this region, in this limit, the amplitude at large and T is given by the following general formula as was demonstrated by Carnalba some years ago. So what is the ingredient of this formula? This is a big conformal ratio. This is the function, explicit function of a small conformal ratio. I can, for me, it's convenient to write down it as a such integral with these two vectors. And the dynamics is hidden, is determined by two functions. One of them is the so-called Pomeron intercept. It's the power, well, it's exponential to the power of this function times logarithm flash conformal ratio. And another may be called Pomeron residue, if you wish. It's not quite a good term, but for the, well, with some stretching, it can be called Pomeron residue. So our goal is to find this Pomeron residue and Pomeron intercept. What is known? The following things. The Pomeron intercept is known, of course, when coupling constant is small. This is the famous BFKL intercept. And we have calculated with my student, former student, I would say, Giovanni Chirilli, the NLO contribution and confirmed the results by Lipatov and Kotikov, which were obtained from the calculation of, actually, it was obtained from calculation, direct calculation of Feynman diagrams. Let me also mention that now the asymptotic at large coupling constant is also known. It is a graviton intercept minus something divided by square root of lambda, and there are a couple of calculations of this function. The original calculation is by Bravo, Parchinsky, Strasser, et al., which they have done it in strings, in a proper stringy way. And there is also a calculation by Carnalba, Costa, and Panidonis, who have done it a little bit roundabout way, but they give the same result. So, yes, this is about Pomeron residue. The residue is also known at small coupling constant. Actually, for that particular correlator, it was written down in this paper. And we have, again, with my collaborator, Giovanni Chirilli, calculated this Pomeron residue in the next leading order just to check that everything works in our approach to next leading order in n equal to 4 and super and PCD. Also, it was calculated at lambda going to infinity by Carnalba. Okay, now what is the goal, our goal? Our goal was to calculate Pomeron residue and confirm Pomeron intercept in the simplest possible way. And for, in our opinion, the simplest possible way is that to find amplitude using the high energy parameter expansion in Wilson line. Let me tell you what it is. Before going to this operator expansion in Wilson line, let me remind you the logic of usual operator expansion in local, or for me it's more convenient to talk about light ray operators like in deep elastic scattering. What you do, you to find the dependence of the amplitude, say, of deep elastic scattering from nucleus or nucleon, you factorize your amplitude in two parts, one with the integrals over transverse momenta greater than some factorization scale of mu square, another with this transverse momenta smaller than mu square, and you call this the coefficient function in front of light ray operator. And this integral gives matrix elements of light ray operators. Of course, it's a little bit phenomenological approach. You can do more accurately. You can you can define this light ray operator with proper counter terms, but, the qualitative approach is like that. So the typical light ray expansion of the product of two electromagnetic currents in light ray operators looks like that. I have written here only one term. And the operators are, let's say, quark in one point, anti-quark in different point, but they lie on the light cone, and the light cone gauge link between these two points. This is a typical operator, and matrix elements of this operator gives pattern density. So to get the dependence of the amplitude on large radiality Q square, you need to write down Renard group equation for this light ray apparatus, which is equivalent to a Diglab evolution of the parton density. It is the usual stuff which people know for more than, I think, more than the average age of the person here. Okay. Let me just look back at that simple calculation and figure out what are the general steps of an operative expansion. If you want to find the amplitude using the operator product expansion, first of all, you need to factorize the amplitude in a product of coefficient function and matrix elements of relevant operators. You need to identify operators and factorize. Second step is to find the evolution equation for this operator with respect to factorization scale, which you introduced at that point. Then solve this evolution equation to the best of your ability. And finally, convolute the solution with the initial conditions. You are going from up to down. You can actually, sometimes it's convenient going from down to up. You write down initial conditions. Then write down evolution equation for these initial conditions, solve them, and finally attach them to your t-product of two curves. Anyway, these are general steps, and I will repeat them for another kind of operator-product expansion, the expansion in Wilson lines. Suppose you have, again, deep and elastic scattering, let's say this photon coming, outcoming, and this nucleus or nucleon, and this virtual photon has large energy. So it decomposes into quark-antiquark pair, and there is a fact which is known, very well known in quantum mechanics, that the propagation of the fast particle reduces to the propagation along the classical trajectory, which is straight line, and the only quantum mechanical effect is the phase factor acquired along the propagation, along this propagation. It's true in quantum mechanics, and it's true in gauge theories. And here, this phase factor is actually gauge factor, which, is order t exponential, which sometimes it's called Wilson line. Therefore, the amplitude of the deep elastic scattering, it reduces to the following thing. There are two gauge links, two Wilson lines, and this is the matrix element of two Wilson line operator. Now, what is the precise meaning of this arrow? What reduces means? Reduces means that we need to use the operator expansion in this operator. So we need these four steps of operator product expansion. Well, the first step is factorization. Remember that for the Diglab evolution, we did factorization in transverse momenta or in virtuality. Here, because we are interested in energy dependence, we factorize in rapidity. So we choose some rapidity divide, eta, and say that integrals always rapidity greater than eta will form coefficient functions. The rapidity, the integrals with rapidity smaller than eta form matrix element of the corresponding Wilson line operators. Why Wilson line? Because I told you that's a general fact. If two particles have different rapidities, in gauge theory, they perceive each other as Wilson line. Because if you sit in frame of one particle, the second particle is very fast. The propagation reduced to the classical trajectory straight line, and this particle perceived the fast particle as a Wilson line. That's the general, and vice versa. This is the general property. So when you are doing this factorization, you need to remember that integrals in this Wilson line operators are cut from above in the rapidity direction. So rapidity, this is so-called Sudakov variable. Well, the meaning of this is that the rapidity of these gluons emitted by the Wilson line is cut from above by the rapidity factorization scale eta. Technically, it is convenient to, you may be wondering why I, for the Cassini fusion function, I draw such a strange diagram. What is the meaning of that? Let me, for a change, sit in the frame of spectator. Then that's vice versa. The target is very fast. If the target is very fast, this, due to the Lorentz contraction, the propagation of these gluons and quarks in the external, well, in this background of this target is the propagation in the field of the pancake of shockwave. Again, let me repeat this. I'm doing integration in two steps. First, integration over these rapidities, and then integration over those. For the purpose of this integration, the rapidity y is smaller than eta can be considered as an external field. After you perform integration in this external field, you can relax. Well, I mean, you can integrate over this rapidity. But the first step is the integration in the external field. So we have some Feynman diagrams in the external field. And in the lowest trivial order, it will be the diagram with only two quarks. In the first non-trivial order, we will have this gluon, which is one of these gluons. Well, let's say this. And again, as I told you, due to the Lorentz contraction, the propagator in the external field of this shockwave or pancake can be simplified. If you write down Feynman formula for the propagator, it's sum of all paths. And let me have a look at the propagation of the particle inside the shockwave. Because shockwave is very thin, it doesn't have to time to deviate in the transverse direction. Therefore, its propagation, this gauge factor can be replaced by the segment of the straight line. And because there is no field outside of the pancake, actually it's a little bit more complicated. That can be only pure gauge field, but it doesn't spoil the argument. Formally, the limits of integration can be extended for this gauge thing from minus infinity to plus infinity, and you get the same Wilson line operator. So it's like two different pictures in two different frames. In the target frame, you have a particle which is very fast, flies for a very long time, and that's why it gives Wilson line. And in the spectator frame, this infinite line reduces to one point of intersection, but still it is the same language, only in two different frames. Looks different, but it's same operator. Okay, so this is the general form of any propagator in this shockwave background. Free propagation up to this point, instantaneous interaction in the light cone time with the shockwave, and propagation to the final point. Therefore, returning to that diagrams, you can now calculate them because this is just perturbative free, perturbative propagator, not a big deal, and you get the following result. This will be matrix element of two Wilson lines multiplied by the result of this calculation, which is a simple function in the leading order. And in the next leading order, the situation is more complicated. I will talk about this later. There will be additional gluon, and in even higher orders more gluons and more Wilson lines. So this concludes the first step of the my operator expansion and Wilson lines in the leading order. I have identified the relevant operators and separated the integrals into coefficient functions and matrix elements. The second step is the evolution equation of these Wilson line operators with respect to the factorization scale eta. How to get this evolution equation? Well, again, I will tell you later, but now let me show you how this formula looks like. The evolution equation in the leading order is very simple. It's given by this so-called dipole kernel. And there will be, of course, the next leading order corrections, about which I will be talking now. How to get this evolution equation? The logic is the same, borrowed from greater product expansion in local operators or in light ray operators. In order to get evolution with respect to this factorization scale eta, you change it. You say that I consider I integrate over the gluons with rapidities between eta 1 and eta 2. The result of this integration will be some evolution kernel times matrix element of the Wilson lines with rapidities up to eta 2. Why Wilson lines? Because same story. If particles have very different rapidities, they perceive each other as Wilson lines. And let me show you the leading order of this evolution. In the leading order, there is only one gluon interacting with this. Well, this reduces to the pancake, so the diagram looks like that, where this is the original Wilson line, this is my pancake, and that's one gluon which is relevant in the leading order. From the inspection of Feynman diagrams, you immediately see that this evolution in terms of Wilson line should be nonlinear, because in the beginning, well, at rapidity eta 1, we have this blue, two blue Wilson line. At rapidity eta 2, we must count the Wilson lines inside the red pancake. There are one, two Wilson line, and one gluon Wilson line, which is equivalent to two core Wilson line in fundamental representation. So after the first step of evolution, we have this nonlinearity. Evolution equation is nonlinear. If you calculate all these propagators, which is a simple thing, you get the following evolution equations for Wilson line operators. It's convenient to define so-called color dipole, which is defined like that. And in terms of these color dipoles, the evolution equations look the following. It was obtained by me independently by Yuri Kovchegov, and after that even more independently from alternative approach, which is sometimes called DreamWalk, which is a renormalization group for the evolution of the target. So it's from the different side. What is the meaning of this equation? How it's related to the stuff which we know from perturbative PCD? Well, the first three terms are exactly the BFKL equation in so-called dipole form. And the BFKL equation does the following. It sums up the Feynman diagrams in the so-called leading logarithmic approximation, where coupling constant is much smaller than one, but coupling constant times logarithm of energy is of order one. Now, what is then, why we need the nonlinear term? We need the nonlinear term in some specific situation, like a semi-classical PCD, S here not for supersymmetric, but for semi-classical. The typical example is the deep-elastic scattering from heavy nuclei. If you have heavy nuclei, and if you want to calculate the evolution of structure function of heavy nuclei, BFKL is not enough, because you have additional large parameter, alpha S times atomic number to the power 1/3. It can be of order of one, and then you need this nonlinear term. So in some sense, this nonlinear equation is the summation of the leading logarithms, but not in perturbative PCD, but in semi-classical PCD. So why, okay, this is the leading order equation. Why do I need the next leading order calculation? As usual, four things. First of all, that you need to check that this high energy apparatus expansion actually works. There are number of factorizations in QCD which are very good at the leading order but completely fail at the next leading order. At least not completely, but one should be accurate. It's not a theorem that if you calculate something in the next leading order, you will get reasonable result. The typical example is the factorization for excluded processes. So I need to check that I say that it's a parity expansion, but I need to prove that, that at least it works in the next leading order. In n equal to 4, we need to check the conformal invariance of our approach. In QCD, well, the most important thing is probably to determine the argument of coupling constant of this nonlinear equation and to get the region application of the leading order. I will be mostly talking about n equal to 4, but let me mention that in QCD, coupling constant has an argument, alpha s of something. And when you are considering Deglab evolution, the evolution of light ray operator, the argument of this coupling constant is fixed by Renard group. It's alpha s of mu of your factorization scale. Here it's not the case because you already sum leading logs with respect to energy and leading logs with respect to vertivality, which give you the running of coupling constant, they're beyond the scope of leading log approximation. So to figure out the argument you need to get out of the leading order, you need next leading order calculations. And of course, in QCD, you have a very practical question, like in our JLab, if we will consider open elastic scattering, whether the energy will be enough to use the leading order evolution equation. Well, for JLab, it's obviously not enough, but for accelerator like planned accelerator EIC or LHEC or ELEC, we need to know the region of application of the leading order equation. Okay, let me start with this point, checking the conformal invariance of this approach. Well, formally, the light-Wilson line is invariant under inversion. You can make an inversion around the point with the component x minus equal to zero, make a substitute, make a change of variables and integral, and the Wilson line goes into itself at only a different position. And that's why the dipole kernel is also invariant under inversion. You can do a little bit better, write down the from the textbook the generators of SL2C group and check that Wilson line is the lies in the spin zero representation of this group SL2C. And then you can check that the your evolution, if you act with the one of these operators on your leading order evolution equation, it is, it is invariant under this SL2C group. So in the leading order, everything is fine. What about next to leading order? You may ask me why, if everything is fine in the leading order, you have formal proof, why I am worried. I'm worried for the following reason, because I have told you in the beginning that the momenta of this dipole are cut from above. And if you make a regularization, such a regularization, it violates conformal invariance, which you will see immediately when you will switch to a real calculation. If you, in this n equal to 4, calculate the coefficient function in front of two Wilson line operator, it will be conformally invariant. Impact factors for in the leading order actually are known again from 70s, but for this particular case, for the scalar, nobody was interested until Kanalba, Costa, and Panidonis calculated this again 3 years before. And as I told you, it's conformally invariant. In the next leading order, you need to calculate a little bit more complicated diagonal with one extra gluon, and that's the result which you get. Where here, sigma is e to the power of, do I have this formula here? No. Sigma is e to the power of your rapidity cutoff. So sigma is related to a rapidity cutoff. And because of this rapidity cutoff, this is not conformally invariant. However, it turns out that if we define the composite operator like that, the impact factor becomes conformally invariant in the next leading order. So I call this a conformal composite dipole. Well, this is the impact factor. You see now that everything is fine with a conformal invariance. And what is the meaning of this construction? Suppose you are calculating the anomalous dimension of some local operator, which has some symmetry, but suppose you forgot about dimensional regularization and use some bad regularization, just act like actual cutoff in the momental space, which doesn't respect your symmetry. You may think that's a crazy way to do, but when I came first to St. Petersburg Leningrad department in 75, there were people who were actually calculating in the standard model with this cutoff. And, they get right results, of course, it is a messy calculation, but the price you pay that in the each step of perturbation theory, you need to invent counterterms which restore your invariance. So the same thing here. I don't know the conformally invariant cutoff of rapidity divergence for the dipole, and to the best of my knowledge, nobody knows. Maybe it even doesn't exist. So I'm forced to deal with some non-invariant cutoff, and the price I pay is that at each order of perturbation theory, I need a counterterm to restore conformal invariance. Okay, so this can be done, and this concludes the first step of the operator product expansion In the next leading order, I separated, expanded the product of two currents in the coefficient function and matrix element of Wilson line operator. There are two in the leading order and four in the next leading order. The next step is evolution equation in the next leading order. The evolution equation is obtained in the same way as in usual operator product, lightweight operator product expansions, let's say like that. You write down formally the operator equation, rewrite it in a convenient way, separating NLO kernel, then consider matrix element of this operator equation, matrix element which is convenient for you. For me, it's convenient to consider sort of matrix element, namely this operator equation in the external field of gluon fang tape. If you do so, you will get the following equation. And then you see that there is calculation of the diagrams, and this is the subtraction of the leading order evolution. It turns out that when you are calculating Feynman diagrams, this subtraction reduces simply to very well-known plus prescription. Well-known, I mean, from the calculations of evolution of DeGlove, deep and elastic scattering. So we have calculated with my collaborator, it was probably 200 diagrams. Unfortunately, you cannot use here directly packages from Mathematica because these are two-dimensional. It's a different way of handling integrals. You need to reduce first of them to two-dimensional and then calculate two-dimensional integrals. So we have done this by hand, and this is the result of calculation. We started with the non-conformal dipole, just with the cutoff, and you see that the evolution equation for this non-conformal dipole with the cutoff has one non-conformal term. And it turns out that if you rewrite evolution in terms of conformal composite dipole, it becomes Möbius invariant. So everything is fine here, therefore, the FKL approach formulated in terms of this composite conformal dipoles works in n equal to 4 superangles. It was not obvious from the beginning. 3 or 4 years ago, there were papers by one of the founders of the BFKL, Victor Fadian, who claimed that there are some discrepancies between BFKL approach. It is not working smoothly in n equal to 4 superangles. But after that, we settled our differences, and now he confirms this result that BFKL approach is good in n equal to 4 superangles in the next leading order. Okay. You can relate actually to the BFKL. To this end, as I mentioned, you need to linearize this equation to make the story short. In my composite conformal operator, there is one parameter A. You can choose in such a way that all the dependence on rapidity will be shifted to A. You can write down the evolution equation in terms of this A. You can do it both for linear and nonlinear case. But for linear case, after some linearization and projection of the evolution equation on the conformal eigenfunctions known from the old papers by Lipatov, you get the following evolution equation of this projection, U with this indices nu, and then it's a projection of a composite conformal dipole on this eigenfunction in transverse plane. And this evolution equation has, the eigenfunction is this Pomeran intercept, and the result coincides with calculations by Lipatov and Kotikov. Pomeran intercept is kind of complicated function. Lipatov's terminology, it has transcendentality 3. And let me mention that result of our calculation concerns with the result of Lipatov and Kotikov, and that result of Lipatov and Kotikov was confirmed by explicit calculation of three-loop splitting functions in QCD and n equal to 4 superangles. So we confirm the intercept. Now about residue of the Pomeran. Well, let me remind you that general formula. In the general formula, well, there was two components, Pomeron intercept and Pomeron residue. So we have calculated Pomeron intercept, but we need also to find Pomeron residue. To this end, we need to, do the following thing. Suppose I'm considering this amplitude and I'm doing two operator expansions in the upper part of the diagram and the lower part of the diagram. This result of this expansion will be impact factor, coefficient function, which is called impact factor, times the color dipole in the leading order, or impact factor times this Fovilson line, two color dipoles in the next leading order. I will do the same for the bottom part of the diagram. And then after this factorization, I will get the impact factor up, top impact factor times bottom impact factor times scattering of two colored conformal dipoles. One thing should be mentioned, that by definition, I want the impact factor to be energy independent. It should not scale with energy. I want all the dependence on energy to be in the scattering of the dipoles. It was, should be constructed, the expansion should be constructed in such a way that impact factor is independent, doesn't have any large logarithms corresponding to energy. The analog which comes here is that suppose, again, you are considering the Diglab evolution, suppose, and you write down the evolution of your parton density, and there is the coefficient function which attaches your virtual photon to this parton density. The coefficient function depends on the on the virtuality of the photon Q square and normalization point mu. And if you choose mu to be different from Q square, you can have logs of Q square to mu square, which again are described by Renom group. But to simplify life, people normally choose mu square equal to q square just to have all logs of q square accounted for by evolution of the parton density. So it's a convenient choice of factorization, mu square equal to q square. Similarly, the convenient choice of this parameter of factorization A here is the following. With this choice of my rapidity cutoff, the impact factors don't scale with energy, and all energy dependence comes from the scattering of the dipoles. It is not difficult, if you know the expression for the impact factors, it's not difficult to, it's convenient to calculate the projection on the conformal eigenfunctions in T-channel. And the result of the calculation is the following. You have, this is the impact factor times dipole-dipole scattering. If you rewrite it in the millinear presentation, if you project it on conformal eigenfunction, the dipole-dipole scattering has the following form, where this is a very simple function. Look, see that here it is more simple than the Pomeran intercept in the transcendentality tune. The projection of the impact factor, the Millin impact factor in the millinear presentation is also not that difficult. Let me return you to this. It's calculated here. Oops, I forgot to write down the expression for the Millin transform impact factor, but the result, the product of these things in NLF have the following form. Again, this is rather simple function, and I don't know why, but it is more simple than Pomeron in the same order. It is more simple than Pomeron intercept. Intercept has transcendentality 3, and here only transcendentality 2. In Pomeron intercept, for example, you have zeta of 3, and here only zeta of 2. So this concludes the program of operator product expansion for my correlation function in n equal to 4. I separated the amplitude in the coefficient functions and Wilson line operators. I found the evolution of Wilson line operators, and I got the result for the amplitude using this operator product expansion. What can be done in PCD? In PCD, well, if you have deep elastic scattering, here the interaction of the gluons with the nucleon or nucleus is non-perturbative. Therefore, you need at this point, you can perform the first two steps. You need, can find, say, for deep elastic scattering, photon and impact factor in the next leading order. You can find evolution of color dipoles. But for the initial condition, you need to have some model, and people are, of course, doing this for HERA and LHC data and obtain reasonable results with the agreement with the experiment, but still at this point, this is the model. Still, this can be done, these first two parts can be done rigorously in PCD. Let me just flash the results. In QCD, you don't have conformal operators because QCD is not conformal, but you can define composite operator in the same way as in n equal to 4, and you can calculate this diagram in QCD, this diagram, where this now is photon. The result of the calculation is given by the following formula. You can actually project it on five tensor structures. The five tensor structures were discussed in a recent paper by Karnauber, Costa, and Panedonis. And we have calculated these corresponding coefficients in front of the tensor structures in the leading order, in the next, and in the next leading order. Let me just mention that it is convenient to project, again, to write down millinear presentation of this photon impact factor. This is convenient because if you have millinear presentation, it's very easy to get Fourier transformation, which is not trivial when you have these complicated results in the coordinate space. And Fourier transformation is what phenomenologists need because they are, well, they are thinking in terms of momentum space. So to use these results for deep structure function F2 of deep elastic scattering, you need the impact factor in the Fourier or in the millinear presentation, which is the same. So again, we have here four structures, not five, because I wrote the projection on the zero spin and the T channel, which is relevant for unpolarized deep elastic scattering. For polarized, we have a projection on the spin two. We also calculated this, but I don't have time to show it now. So there are four structures. And the final result is for the Milne representation of the fourth leading order, next leading order impact factor is not that difficult. Again, it looks like the formula, five formulas, analogous to formulas in for scalars in n equal to 4 supernumeral. So there are some simple functions of transcendentality too. And this is the first time when this result was obtained analytically, because people, of course, tried to do this by direct calculation of Feynman diagrams and failed. The result of the calculation was part analytical, part numerical. So here, it is you see that there is a clear advantage of the calculations of using the technique in the external field. It gives you an opportunity in the coordinate space to get the result consistent with the conformal invariance. Of course, in QCD, we don't have conformal invariance. Still, the approximate conformal invariance is a very good guideline for practical calculations in perturbative QCD. So this is it. For polarized deep elastic scattering, I will skip it. It can also be obtained. Show you also the evolution equations for color dipoles in QCD. This is the n equal to 4 part. The brown terms and blue terms are new terms which appear in QCD. This term is conformal. And this term is proportional directly. The non-conformal part is proportional to the first coefficient of Gell-Mann lower function, proportional to B. So the NLO kernel in QCD is the sum of conformal part and non-conformal part is directly proportional to the running coupling constant. Hopefully it will mean that in higher order there will be also some conformal structure dressed by the running coupling constant. But of course we don't know that, but we would like to think like that. Okay, the argument of coupling constant, I don't have time to tell everything about that, but using the Normalon approach, we estimated the argument of coupling constant, and roughly speaking, the argument of coupling constant in PCD is given by the size of the smallest dipole in this evolution. There are one parent dipole, Z12 is the size Z12, and two daughter dipoles, and the coupling constant is the sign of the size of this, is determined by the size of this smallest dipole. So conclusions and outlook. Well, the first conclusion is this operator expansion in Wilson line really works at the next leading order level. As I told you, there are examples in PCD of the factorizations which are fine at the leading order level, but suspicious or sometimes fail in the calculations in the next leading order. So here everything works. And there are also some more technical conclusions that this NLO BK evolution kernel for the evolution of conformal composite dipoles is Möbius invariant in the SL2C invariant. The NLO BK kernel agrees with the NLO BFKL calculation. We have calculated explicitly to check our approach correlation function of for D-square operators. And in PCD, we've calculated analytically NLO photon impact factor for the first time. What is the outlook? The outlook for me is to relate this formally to the expansion in light ray operators. Why, and to relate the BFKL equation to the anomalous dimensions of local operators. How it is done? In the leading order, it's kind of trivial. Let me remind you that gluon parton density is proportional to the matrix element of the following light ray operator, where this is the Bjorken X, stands here, and mu squared is the normalization point. This operator doesn't have any, it's a mixture of operators with different conformal spin. Here, this is a spin with respect to SL2C group on the line. It's different from the group which I have discussed before. Oops, sorry. And the operator with definite conformal spin can be defined like that. I wrote this expression for the forward scattering, which is relevant to my amplitude. For the non-forward scattering, this is more complicated, but for me to relate to this previous formulas at high energy, this operator is enough. Forward scattering is enough. The anomalous dimension of this operator is at integer n, it coincides with anomalous dimension of the local twist two operator. It can be formally proved, but it's almost trivial. At integer n, if you expand this, you will get the pole of 1. If you expand this in powers of lambda, you will get a pole of j minus n. At j equal to n, you get the anomalous dimension of this leading twist operator. So how you relate this to the BFKL? You say the following. Let me consider my dipole. For convenience, I will differentiate it 2 times with respect to transverse coordinate. Then, in the leading order, the size of the dipole can serve as an ultraviolet cutoff. Now, suppose I'm taking now x to 0. If I take x to 0, I get operator on the light ray, but it will be ultravioletly divergent. And if there is separation between, transverse separation between x and 0, you may think about this as a kind of ultraviolet regularization for the light ray operators. Of course, it's not very good regularization. The proper regularization is using counter terms, but in leading order, you may say that this is the regularization, then the normalization point is x perp minus 2.
And I have here the rapidity cutoff eta. In the leading order, again, rapidity cutoff eta corresponds to Bjorken x equal to e to the minus eta. So in the leading order, this color dipole corresponds to light ray operator with normalization point x prop square and Bjorken x equal to e my to power minus my rapidity cutoff. Then you can rewrite this part, well, this light ray operator in terms of light ray operators with definite spin. This is the Meline transformation of this type. And you can rewrite it in terms of, well, the Meline transformation has this, let me explain you this factor. This is a normal normalization point x perp minus 2. Therefore, if you make evolution, go to some, yeah, you probably should have put here mu naught, different mu. If you go to some mu naught, there will be factor mu 1 square mu naught square to the power minus anomalous dimension. So here, the factor is x perp square times mu square in power minus anomalous dimension of this light ray operator. It is convenient to rewrite it in terms of omega, which is j minus 1. If I write down like that, well, the anomalous dimension depends not only on j, but on omega. And you have this Meline representation. Let me now write down the evolution of the color dipoles with respect to energy. The evolution can be written down in the Meline form again like that. This is that my Pomeran intercept. The evolution goes from point eta to some point eta naught. There is a Pomeran intercept. And this is the, when you expand in color dipole in Meline form, you have this factor. But here gamma is our variable of integration. And this omega gamma is non-trivial function of gamma. If you relate this formula to this, you see that you need to identify the omega in this formula, which is a variable of integration, with the Pomeran intercept here. And you need to identify gamma, which is a variable of integration here, with the anomalous dimension here. So what technically happens, you take the Pomeran intercept and solve in terms of gamma. And this gives you the anomalous dimension, actually the asymptotics of anomalous dimension at omega go to zero or at j it go to one, which is an unphysical point for the local operators with the number n. It's n equal to one, which doesn't exist for gluons. They start from n equal to two. So the BFTL equation gives you the asymptotics of anomalous dimensions in all orders of perturbation theory, but at this non-physical point. This is very good in the leading order, and it's how, well, it was realized again many years ago. In the next leading order, unfortunately, the situation is a little bit more complicated. You can relate the NLO BFKL to the anomalous dimensions, to the next leading order expression for anomalous dimension, but there is some price to pay. And it is, for me at least, it is rather confusing because this intercept, Pomeran intercept, which I wrote in the general formula with the conformal ratios, it's omega in my notations, it's not the same Pomeran intercept from which you extract anomalous dimensions. To this, it is explained in paper by Lipatov, but the bottom line is you need to redefine it in such way, and then you can solve this equation and get anomalous dimension of this operator. So if you take Pomeran intercept from your conformal calculations, you cannot extract directly the anomalous dimensions of the conformal light ray operators from that. Maybe the reason is that the two groups are very different. The SL2R group is not a subgroup of SL2C. They are different groups. One of them is invariant under rotation in transverse plane, and another is invariant under rotation around the line, longitudinal line. Maybe that's the reason, but this prevents this prevents me from formally writing down the expansion of the color dipole in light ray apparatus. And technical reason is that we use a very different regularization. For the light ray apparatus, it's normal dimensional regularization. And for the conformal composite dipoles, it's this two-step regularization with the cutoff in momentum space and then construction of the conformal composite dipoles. Probably it's a technical question. I hope to solve them in some future. But for now, in order to relate analog calculation to anomalous dimension, I need to look into the Lipatov's paper, where it is extracted from this omega star doesn't correspond to any conformal thing. You need to forget about the conformal invariance at this point, unfortunately. And then you can extract the anomalous dimension of your light ray or local apparatus. This is it. Thank you for attention.
We have time for one or two questions.
Could you describe, sort of picturesly, the differences between QCD and n equals 4 superior Mills in the next to leading order? What is simpler, maybe in n equals 4? What happens there with respect to QCD?
When I'm clicking to the diagrams, let me tell you immediately that everything is simple. I'm always telling to my students that Lagrangian for n equal to 4 looks scary, but actually the theory is much more simple. So I would, from now on, I will start all perturbative calculation in QCD from n equal to 4. It's a very good way to do it. But let me show you what is the actual difference. This is this diagram. It starts from the next leading order. In the leading order, BFKL is the same in n equal to 4 superior Mills and in QCD. In the next leading order, we have Gluino and scalar loops, which is not, well, they are simpler than QCD diagrams, and that's why, they, on the other hand, they cancel a pretty large amount of terms of QCD diagrams. So it is very convenient to, if you are interested in QCD, let me repeat, it's very convenient to start from n equal to 4 calculation.
When you were talking about anomalous dimension to two loops, resumed anomalous dimension to two loops, which scheme it corresponds to?
Well, you know that better than me then. It was done accurately by Lipatov. So first he calculated the anomalous dimension in so-called DIS scheme, and after that related this to MS bar scheme. He had done everything in momentum representation. So.
What I meant, you start from kernel, BFKL kernel.
Yes.
So it has its own scheme dependence.
Oh, the scheme dependence is just, I mean, it's three diagrams. What scheme dependence?
Well, you could, as you said, you introduced...
I mean, NLO BFKL, yes? Yeah. Well, there is the dimensional regularization. I use dimensional regularization, of course.
Very good. Then the question is, using this procedure, you will get resumed anomalous dimension. It will be resumed anomalous dimension in the same MS-bar scheme.
That's my hope, and I tried to do this, but I failed. That's why, at this point, that's why I looked how Lipatov has done it. And he has done it in the way as you described. They have calculated the NLO BFKL in dimensional regularization. Then they went to DIS regularization for some technical reason, obtained anomalous dimension of local operators, and then recalculated this anomalous dimension in MS bar. So it was like a roundabout way, but it's unavoidable, at least up to now.
Another question, you could show next to last transparency.
Next to last. There are some clicking.
No.
With the conclusions, or with local anomalous dimension?
Yeah, this one. When you wrote this Milne presentation, did you assume some analyticity for the anomalous dimension? What analytical properties of the anomalous dimension in omega plane that you assume here?
This Milne presentation.
Next line, integral of omega, yes, this representation, yeah, yeah.
One second. This formula, I did it rather formally, I think. It's probably the only property which you need that there are no poles, well, you can shift the contour that it is, avoids any poles of anomalous dimension, but that's. Do you expect some difficulty from this?
Simply no. Simply you were comparing two different formulas obtained using different approaches. So this formula, first formula from conformal expansion of the object, and next formula from this Lequille factorization. And the second formula, integral goes along imaginary axis, right? This formula.
This is from BFL, and this formula from the light ray apparatus.
Yes,
you take, you don't know, do trivial thing. This is a. Take Millini representation for light ray apparatus, and if you didn't encounter any singularities of anomalous dimension, I think you are fine.
Okay, since we are running a bit late, people can discuss in the break. Let's thank Jan again.